Welcome to Star Wars Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. Search your call ID 17702 or search for Starfleet Universe On Call. Or I would suggest, actually, if you want to join us in the chat room, to go over twitch.tv. Just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. Go there and you'll join this wonderful chat room. And you will talk to us there. And I'll do my best to respond to anything that is relevant to the podcast for that evening. Because this is recorded live. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, want to follow my Twitter. My account there is also sfuoncall. And my personal account there is Paul Franz. It's PAULFRANZ. There's no T in that. So just a reminder that if you want to follow me there, I am a rabid O's fan. I love being a Catholic, and also I love all kinds of texts. If any of those bother you, don't follow me. And of course, I have my other account, which is my business account for Franz Games, which is called, shocker, Franz Games, FRANZGAMES. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from AABD this week is that they're still working on getting advanced ops and strat ops going, and strategic ops. Yeah, sorry, that was strat ops. That's SO. Sorry, forgive me. They're working on that, and the Steve Cole just put on to their graphic artist person to create the covers. That's what I was looking for that, which would be going great. Of course, just a reminder that ADB also has plenty of free things, including First Missions, which is a way of to learn about FedCom, Federation Commander, you know, and it's beginning rules, you know, so you can start playing it with and it's absolutely and utterly free. Of course, also they have Starfleet Battle Force. There's some new cards that you can play test. You can download directly from StarfleetGames.com. Just go to StarfleetGames.com, go to the research page, and you'll find the resources for Starfleet Battle Force. And of course, you can find the Starfleet Battles Cadet Training Manual there too, which is always a great thing because it is free and you can download it from the three e-tailers that ADB uses, which is, of course, Warehouse 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and War Game Vault. So just keep those in mind. Of course, there's plenty of historical documents, which are also available, including maps, deck plans, and assorted graphics. And of course, if you want to, I don't have it on my computer here, but I have them on my computers, which is, I use the background of one of the Andromedans, which is really awesome for desktop. They have lots of desktop images that you can use for your computer, which is great. And of course, I'm sure some of those can be tweaked so they can actually be the background image for your phone. And moving on to SFB Online tournaments, there is none running at this moment in time. So when it comes to libraries, no progress there. I haven't seen any updates. I was helping out Frank with one of his campaigns because he's switching over GM duties over to somebody else, and he needed all of those person's ships assigned to a different person. And that actually I have to look at because it took way longer on my machine than I thought it really should have. That's one of the things I should probably look at to see what's the performance issue with that, which is just weird. I'm not sure what. I'm sure it's probably has to do with a lot of notifications or things like that, but still, weird overall. But anyway, with that, that is the news for this week. And it makes sense. The one and only Paul Friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's me. I see Dave laying about. And of course, we have Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Good evening, everybody.
Yeah, it's actually one thing. Barry has a job at the moment that Raiders 13 Jacksonville 11. You gotta be kidding me. What a way to start the night. Yes, it is that time of year again. It's football season. Starts to rear its ugly head. That's American football, not European. So every once in a while, for those of you who know me, you will hear some scores for the Thursday night game every once in a while. Because Dave is good and keeps an eye on those things while he listens to my wonderful voice. So, anyhow, the one thing that Barry would like us to do, and I'm not personally, I'm about the whole idea at the moment, just because of we've been doing it at the same time for so long that I'd hate to change it. And the one thing he wants to do is actually move it from 9:30 at night to 8:30 at night, because currently he has to wake up at 3:30 in the morning. Well, that's mainly partly that's because of he has to, you know, head off to work at 6:30 in the morning, and he's a slow starter. Let's put it that way. So it takes him like 3 hours to get started in the morning, which I don't know how you did it. Whatever. That's not me, you know. I'm a person that, if I didn't have to take a shower in the morning, which the way I actually have to, is part of my morning routine. If I really needed to rush out the door, I could do it in 30 minutes. But, you know, I normally takes me an hour and a half to get started in the morning. So 3 hours, yeah. But to each his own. But anyway, and unfortunately, there's not many people in the chat room, so I'm going to have to wait for a response from people whether they would be okay with me moving it to 8:30. So at the moment, I'll leave that open. If you have a definite opinion on that, obviously, feel free to send me an email at sfuoncall@gmail.com, or of course, you can also reach me via either my Twitter accounts. One of my three Twitter accounts, you know, the SFU On Call. I prefer that one because it's related to the podcast and it makes it easier to track that way. Obviously, Paul Franz, if you're following me there, and of course, Franz Games, if you want to do it on that one. Obviously, the same person going to all three accounts counts only as one. So, for those who care, this is not really a democracy, but I want people's opinions on it because of. To me, 9:30 works out for me, especially given that sometimes I have a lot of things to get done before the podcast gets started, especially these days, because invariably it's like any other thing in your life. For example, when they started, you know, allowing us to work from home. Now this is before the whole pandemic thing. That the problem comes into being. That when you do that, you changed your schedule for when you're at home, changed your work schedule itself, you know, where you spend your time. And of course, invariably, what happens during the day is that what normally you wouldn't take care of during the day, you happen to take care of during the day. For example, because of I'm around here instead of down like an hour's drive away from here, there are certain things I can do that, you know, during my lunch, which is still my lunch, and I still take a lunch. I'm not one of those silly people who, because they work from home, feel like they have to work through the lunch and eat lunch right there in front of the computer. It's like, no, I'm sorry. No, I still take my hour lunch during that time because that's my time to take a break from work. And from the beginning to the end, that's my work time. That's what I'll be doing as much as possible. Obviously, to me, if I think it, work from home, it's just like working from an office at work, which means I still get like coffee breaks and things like that, you know. So it's not always, because if you think about it, if you ever are actually in work, at work, you don't work the whole time. You know, you take your bathroom breaks, you take your coffee breaks. Sometimes you just sit there and don't work at all. You know, you chill out, which is a good thing, is you have some little bit of downtime in the middle of working. But anyhow, back to the original thing, which is, you know, it changes the way your schedule is. And right now my schedule is made so that 9:30 is the time that I do this podcast. So obviously that can change. I originally set it up for 9:30 because I was concerned about people on the West Coast. And that is, I want to make sure that if people wanted to join us from the West Coast, they could. Yes, it's basically 6:30 at West Coast time that this thing starts. But I figured that's after dinner is done, or maybe if you really want to be here and you had to maybe eat dinner just a little early, you could do it. You know, nothing too crazy. But obviously, 8:30 means that if you're on the West Coast, then you couldn't, and you wanted to actually have supper with your family, you couldn't. Or you couldn't be here. You had to make a choice. You know, so obviously, I'd like to hear people's opinion on that, whether moving to 8:30 would be fine or not. I'll be listening, and I'm not going to make the change today or next week. Most probably the way it's going, it might be in a month. I have to wait and see. Because the funny part is, I can see it now that he says, oh, you know, like they've changed to 9, you know, from 9:30 to 8:30, and then all of a sudden, what happens? He gets, you know, because right now Barry is stuck on the East Coast because of the whole travel issue. You know, I'm not sure if those of you who actually know, actually listen to news, that of course we've had some issues with actually getting flights, and actually when you get tickets for a flight, that the flight actually is there, so you actually will get on the plane and go someplace. And they're having issues with that, so Barry's work has decided, no, okay, since we can't rely on the airline to actually get us where we need to go in a timely fashion, Barry, you're staying on the East Coast for the time being. Now, the question is, how long will that be an issue? You know, I don't know, because I'm willing to bet sometime in the next 6 months, he's going to be on the West Coast, and all of a sudden, he's going to want to be moved into 9:30. He's like, no, that's not the way this thing works. That's the whole idea of having a live show at all, was to actually have a set time that we got together, the whole, you know, so. Ah, okay. Oh, geez, Mad Cow, you're here. Dang. It's been a long time no see, man. So I forgot about the Alaskan time, which is past Pacific time. Yeah, damn. So, and case in point, thank you, Mad Cow, for pointing that out, you know, because we actually have some people who actually show up, which are, you know, it would probably even be harder for you to be here, which is, of course, Mad Cow is Russ. For those who knows what Mad Cow is on Twitch. So anyway, for those folks who listen and actually want to join us on Thursday nights, please, you know, contact me via email or Twitter, however you want to do it. I'd say Facebook, but I'm not sure many people actually would use Facebook. But anyway, moving onward and forward. Gary! How you doing?
Hello, Paul. Well, actually, there's a few different things I wanted to bring up. I guess it's been a while, and there's been some different types of news floating around the BBS, so I just thought it might be worth talking about one or two of them.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't I'm not on the BBS as much as I really should be. Depends on the week. This week is one of those weeks that I've checked it maybe twice. So did I miss something important? Because I know I saw that they're working on a Strat Ops and I think Advanced Ops, something else.
So that is true. That's actually one of the things for the last several months, a few months, especially with StratCom, they were able to put some extra work into it. But today, actually, there was a post basically saying that it looks like StratOps is all but done. So we should hopefully see it in the very near future, the new edition of it.
Mm-hmm.
And AdvancedOps should be along in the near future after that, because that's also just about on the bubble, or whatever the term is. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully after that, we'll get on to Captain's Log 55. So you'll actually get a chance to see a bunch of projects across the universe move together at once. Because, as you know, every time a Captain's Log comes out, it's always got a bit for everybody. So definitely looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, last not least, FedCom, which I'm seeing Steve Cole's post for today. And he said basically there's three possibilities. Fighters, gunboats, or X-ships. Me personally, I'd say X-ships, because personally, fighters, let them go. Let them go. Please let them go. Next one for me after X-ships would be gunboats, then possibly fighters. Because I'm sorry, I think about fighters. I think about the craziness that fighters introduce to gameplay, and that's why it's like I just want to say no, just let them go, don't add them, have them specific for heavy reliant empires like the Hydrans, where it's basically part of them that they have fighters. Federation, not so much. They use the very good effect because of course, the greatest thing is that fighters are these great drone platforms, drone launch platforms. In which case, that's just the number of drones, that number of seeking weapons that came onto the board because of that was nuts. Now, I'm not remind me because it's been so long, Gary, when it comes to fighters and FedCom. I know they were trying to come up with a different solution when it comes to fighters, and FedCom versus fighters when they added them to SFB.
There is a one of the issues of Communique has a set of playtest rules for fighters attack, which basically outlines the way in which different types of fighters, like Tholian fighters and drone fighters, plasma fighters. But the main thing to bear in mind is that the way the FedCom does it is that, or would do it, is that every empire would get one fighter only. So, for example, the Feds would get, you wouldn't even really call it the F-18. It's basically just their fighter, which just happens to be similar to an F-18.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would actually line up with Shapeways, because most Shapeways have a ton of different fighters nowadays, but the standard fighters for most often empires are already on there. So, and also there's rules for drone swarms so that you're not necessarily launching all the drones individually from a single flight. So, basically, if you have a look on the BBS, there's a section under the FedCom portion for Fighters Attack. And if you scroll through that, you should see a link to the PDF for the issue of Communique that has the playtest rules.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll take.
I do agree in that. I do agree that X-ships would be my preference as well. Followed by gunboats and then fighters. So, I doubt it would be in the box itself or in the package itself, but I definitely like to see a chance to get a ship card for the GSX, the Advanced Survey Cruiser. I'm sure that there'll be plenty of opportunities for new first-gen X-ships once those loads come out. But I mean, they're still going to work a little bit differently to the way they do on SSD, which of course is only natural.
Okay, but, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think straight test rules for them, and so far they seem okay. Although the only one minor thing is that if you look at a chip card from the Andromedan chips, they actually include a box to represent the power that's in your batteries. And, of course, the Andromedans need that because that power gets transferred to other systems on the chip. But there isn't an equivalent box for the X batteries on an X chip. And so I, just as a kind of like a helpful thing, I would prefer, personally, if the X chip cards had those as well. But they're probably not going to get them, so it's no great loss anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is there anything special when it comes to the X chips? When it comes to, I was just wondering if they increase like the amount of battery power you can put to reinforcement for X chips. You know, instead of limiting, I know currently limits to the size of the batteries, but you know, with X chips having larger batteries, you know, and you know, is it limited to the number of batteries or limited to the power that can be stored in those batteries?
Okay, so just a reminder for people who might not be familiar with FEDCOM versus SFB. In SFB, the reserve power that you have throughout the time is only that you can store inside your batteries. And so non-X batteries just have one point energy point per battery, whereas first-generation X batteries have three per battery. So if you have a chip with six X batteries, then that equals 18 reserve points of power, which by SFB standards is quite a lot, unless you're Andromeda, because they used to be able to fit more. But then if you fill your batteries with an Android chip, then you have to worry about blowing up. So probably not a wise thing for an Android to try to stop the batteries in assembly. Now, in Fed Commander, it's different because Fed Commander basically treats all power that you don't assign in energy allocation as reserve power. So what the batteries do instead is that they limit the amount of reinforcement that you can do at a single time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, FEDCOM doesn't have general shield reinforcement. They only have specific reinforcement.
Right.
So if you have a chip with four non-X batteries and an incoming volley comes in, then on the one hand, you're only allowed to reinforce that facing shield by four because that's the number of batteries you have. But on the flip side, if you get hit by multiple volleys throughout the turn, then as long as you've got the reserve power, you can actually do up to four to block each volley, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, with X batteries on in Fed Commander, if you have four X batteries, you'll be able to use up to 12 energy points in reinforcement in a single volley.
Okay. I wanted to make sure that, you know, they can take advantage of the additional amount of power that they can actually have stored in the batteries. Because I'm not sure if in the rules they actually state originally, you know, that, I mean, before X chips will be available in FEDCOM, that it was actually based on the number of disabled. I have to remember the term, because I know they're not called destroyed in FEDCOM, they're called disabled. So I know there's a reason why, I just can't remember why, to be honest, why they changed the term.
Well, part of it is that certain systems on chip are easy to repair in FEDCOM. So, because on the one hand, it's easier to take damage in FEDCOM because there's no star castling,
mm-hmm.
and you're limited to, as we said, you're limited with your shield reinforcements.
Right, and then
also,
there's...
also, shield burn through is on the standard. Over in FEDCOM, in SFB rather, leaky shields are only optional.
Right, exactly.
In SFB, it's harder to keep get the actual internals, but then it's more expensive to repair them. Whereas in FEDCOM, it's easier to get the internals, but then it's easier to fix them up again.
Okay. Understood. So, bugger. Pardon me. I'm not sure if you've been, anyone who's been noticing, watching the video, knows I've been kind of fighting with my kitten. Keeps on bothering me. Because unfortunately, I'm home. I'm pretty much home alone. My youngest child is upstairs in her room, and my wife is gone to visit a friend of hers, so there's no one else to keep them busy. So, annoying as that might be. But anyway, so yeah, agreed. You know, X-Chips would definitely be better in Fakom than either one. Now, I'll definitely take a look see at the playtests for fighters. I think I actually did look at it one time, but I'm pretty sure I was not too thrilled with the overall plan for the fighters. You know, it probably worked out fine. It's just, again, I just look at the fighters and go, just leave them out. You know, that's one thing that they wanted to have with Fedcom, which was they wanted to simplify the game. You know, not make it SFB light, which some people, that's what people were calling Fedcom, but it have it so that, you know, it was faster to play. And fighters are one of those things that slowed down. Actually, not just fighters. All the seeking weapons that end up being on the board, that's one of those things that slowed down the game, period. Now, the tough part about SFB, to be SFB in my mind, is that, unfortunately, you need seeking weapons on the board. At least for some empires, because of seeking weapons aren't weapons per se. What they are is their mobile terrain that forces your opponent to move, you know, in certain directions, at least by the threat of being damaged threatens them to say, okay, oh, to move away from you, or possibly even expend their firepower to destroy that barrier to get to you. So they expend either just power and position, or they have to expend power and weapons to get at you. So I'm not saying that you should have the ability to play the game without seeking weapons. I don't think that's the case, because that's not SFB. That's not a Federation Commander, Federation Commander, which was based off of SFB. So, because that's one of those things that's I'm not sure if I talked to Daniel Cass about that or not. I know I talked to him about the whole issue that for the playtest tractor beams, but I know I've mentioned it many times on this podcast, and I'm not going to go through that little scenario again. But definitely something that got wrong the first time they did it, which was instead of making the drones actually on the board pieces, you know, missiles that actually could move as fast as the ship, I forget what it was in the original Admiralty edition. It's been a while. How they did seeking weapons. But they didn't do them, in my mind, the right way. You know, because they weren't those mobile terrain feature that is one of the parts of SFB. You know. But there was something else you wanted to talk about, Gary?
I was just going to say, funny enough, one of the other topics on the BBS was Mike West basically was proposing like a Stellar Shadows version of the Federation that never deployed drones.
Oh, yeah.
And so he was basically, coming up with ideas for that. And actually, one thought I had there was because I was picking through the rules for the plasma carronade, and it turns out that it actually advises what you would do if you wanted to create a weapon that was only the carronade. So it couldn't bolt, it couldn't launch a seeking weapon, it was literally made only. And apparently on the if you put that onto an SSD, it would be listed as PLC rather than like Plasma F or whatever. So one idea I was thinking was that if, because there's a handful of plasma variants for the Federation in the standard timeline.
Right.
But in like an alternate no-drone timeline, maybe the Gorns could basically produce a more streamlined export model of the PLC and then export that to the Feds. So that's basically what they use. So that would still basically make them useful to try to deal with cloak ships on the Romulan border. But you wouldn't need to invent a whole new weapon for that purpose. And then you could look at the other things that may or may not be needed in order to make a drone as Fed work.
Yeah, actually, it got started in April, and I to be honest, I've not been following the thread much. I've looked at it on and off, and the one thing I don't, I'm just looking at, I'm doing a quick look now, but the one thing that I, I'm looking at the general overview of it. Of course, did they mention the one thing? Okay, no, they didn't. Okay, but they did the whole idea of ship photons, gun versus gunboat photons versus fighter photons. Which is an interesting idea. Though, as Gary, you know about when it comes to the Feds, one of the things that they originally was, I'm not sure it was proposed or was planned for, it never came to being, which was the whole idea of you have regular photons, you had mini photons, mini photons being for like the frigates and the destroyers, and then you have larger photons, which are for like bases and some of the larger ships and like the battleships, those kind of things.
Well, that's what they gave to the Federal Republic over.
I understand. And what was it? Module P6, I think they had the reasoning. I think that's where I got the story from, which was module P6. The designers, not the designers. It was P6. Was that the playtest module or something?
Oh, the I think it's called the smorgasbord or something.
Yeah, that one. Which. It's a definitely interesting rule book, and that was one of the things, was the whole idea of mini photons and so forth, i.e. what got introduced into the Omega FRA, FRA, Federal Republic of Aurora. I think I got that right. But yeah, the one thing that I was looking for, which is interesting, they mentioned the close in defense, the system, basically the defense system used by monsters, which would be interesting. CS?
Well, so the monster one is the NSIDS, which is like a different thing entirely, but what's being proposed in that thread is called the CDS. It's like a modified version of the ADD, which is able to damage plasma. Now, I mean, I had my own thoughts about what like kind of system that would be like, whatever. But I guess I'll leave it to ADB to decide like what the answer would be. But I don't know. I mean, like by way of comparison, when the Aurorans had a drone system, and they had to modify it to be able to attack a new type of weapon, a new type of target. The engineering was extreme enough that they had to completely modify it so that it could no longer fire anti-drone guns. So it became a new type of weapon. So I don't know whether or not you could go, you wouldn't have to go all in order to create a weapon to do what's being proposed. But then again, you know, it's that would be a kind of like an ADB level decision in terms of where the engineering would be on that.
Interesting.
But I mean, what I'm thinking now is, I mean, again, like if it was my own proposal, I would talk differently about it because the last thing I want to do is sound like I'm trying to throw anyone else's ideas under the bus. But in retrospect, what I'm thinking is that if the whole idea of the system is to make it easier to deal with plasma, specifically plasma that's being fired at you by a non-main ship, then maybe instead of trying to modify the ADD to help shoot down the plasma after the plasma has already been lost at you, you could use the carronade variants to try and disrupt the Romulan ship's ability to hide under cloak in the first place. So you're in the overall length of the battle, you're retaining a degree of advantage that the Federation ships would have, like historically, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Make
So
them.
I almost wonder, thinking about it, maybe just leave the ADDs are. Even if it means that they're not going to be that great against the Romulans. And then just say that on the Romulan front, you're deploying the carronade variants, and that is what gives you an advantage when you're fighting them.
Understood, understood. Okay, because that's the one thing I'm looking at this, and okay, what I was looking at, right. All ships with drones as primary weapons don't exist. All ships with plasma Fs don't exist, which is weird. All ships with drones as secondary weapons exchange drones racks for CDS racks, which is, again, interesting. I have to look at the rules, but I'm surprised that Mike West didn't come up, didn't, because I'm. Hey, Doug. Hey. I'm surprised that he didn't try with a proposal of basically. Take the DFDs, you know, direct fire drones, and codify that instead. Say, okay, this basically a drone rack, which is basically a direct fire drone rack, and basically codify that into an actual weapon instead of. So, in my mind, that would make things a lot easier when it comes to a conversion. Now, whether that simple conversion would work or not, don't know. You know.
I don't know. I mean, like, I think the onus seems to be to try to minimize the number of new things that you're inventing. So, I mean, yes, the CDS would be a new thing, so to speak, and allowing the feds in the Alpha Octant to use it for a 4-point photon for their fighters, that would be new-ish. But, like, a direct-fire drone, that would technically be, like, an entirely new system. I suppose it would be kind of like the mass driver that the Magellanic Empires have. I guess that would be maybe that would be better to keep that in the Magellanic Cloud.
Right.
Although ironically enough, when it comes to the Magellanic weapons, because there's like a different thread that I myself set up, where I was wondering if does the LMC Empires have a twin laser? Basically, it's the same size mount as a medium laser or like a phaser one.
Right.
But the twin lasers, it will fit two light lasers side to side.
Right, right.
So the phaser equivalent would be basically a twin phaser or phaser T, which use the same option mount space to squeeze to phaser threes or wide angle phaser threes or whatever side by side. And I guess the way that discussion has been going is that if it's an empire that has enough flexibility to install, like move the space aboard ship around so that you can fit regular phaser mounts, then there's no real point not just basically putting two phaser threes side by side. But on the other hand, I still argue that if it's like an empire like the Zosman Marauders or the Alliance or whatever, who have specific option mounts that can't do that. Like, you can't basically take a regular Orion or Zosman or Velasco or whatever option mount and say, I want to put two phaser threes into it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's where the phaser T would come into, if the phaser T would be allowed to exist in the first place, of course. Because it might be that maybe the concept of a twin weapon is supposed to stay unique to the Magellanic Cloud.
Right, right.
So I guess that's another question as well.
Yeah, well, at the same time...
But ironically enough, the idea... Yeah.
No, yeah, but the one thing I was going to point out is that, of course, you have the Gatling phaser as part of the Alpha Octant history. And originally, of course, we had the X ships, and the first time going go through was the whole idea of that those the phasers for the X ships, if you overload them, you can fire them multiple times.
Which well, that's two separate things because the overloads are gone.
Well, oh, yeah, and
still around.
Yeah. I know. They're gone. I know they changed what the X crews are, but the original go around, which obviously you know, as Barry would point out, that originally, if you read the original X-ship module, it states that this module will be tweaked in the future, and it never was for 20 years. Hard time actually saying that. It tells you how old the SFB is, you know. But still, it was an idea that was a possible part of the history of the Alpha Octant. You know, so I don't think it'd be that crazy of an idea to bring it in. But, you know. But, you know, again, the whole idea of having the feds without their drones, it's definitely, it changes the way the Federation, the way it's interaction. Now, the question, here comes the question in my mind when it comes to that. Let's say that the feds didn't go down that route. That they didn't have, you know, gobs of seeking weapons, you know, gobs of drones, missiles, whatever you want to call them. Would that affected their neighbors, i.e., to me, the biggest one is the Klingons. Or would it be that since the Zinnis focus so much on drone technology and the way their empire was built, you know, the way their ships were built was close in, and then you have the drones to augment that. And since, you know, the Klingons and the Zinnis, I call quickly, you know, okay, you have the Four Powers War. Was there any other wars that was against the Klingons versus the Zinnis? And then the Four Powers?
about four or five of them, yeah. And they were like among the two oldest. Actually, well, the very first empire that came out fought with Illyrians, and then they ran into the Kzintis, and there's been several Klingon Kzinti wars. But yes, the I suspect that the it wouldn't really have an impact on, because the thing is that the Klingon use a drone, I guess it'd be an echo of the Kzinti use of drones.
Right.
So really be affected one way or the other by what the Federation agreed.
Right. Well, that's what I was trying. I was coming around to, which was that even if, you know, the Federation did not have drones, it would not change anything when it comes to the Klingons themselves, because of the four powers, the multiple wars of the Klingons versus that when they fought the Zinnies. And the Zinnies, the way the empires and the ships were for the empires were designed was with drones in mind, seeking weapons in mind to begin with from the get-go. In my mind, when it comes to the Federation from the get-go was not a seeking weapon empire. That's not what the way they started at the very beginning. You know?
So if you want to go down that route, you could basically say, take a leaf from FedCom and then wonder, well, what if there's a variant SFB timeline where drones themselves have a cap on them in terms of just how crazy they can get?
Yeah.
So what if you got rid of things like, MIRV warheads or scatter packs and stuff, and you pared things down? Because bear in mind that in Fed Commander, even for X-ships, the drones that X-ships have in the playtest for FedCom, the only difference is that they start off at speed 32 by default, but they're the same drones. Like they're not the Type 7 drones that the X-ships have in Fed Commander, in SFB. That's not that at all. So, I'm not saying that you'd have to pair that back in SFB either.
Oh, understood. Understood.
I mean, there's something said for basically, taking a broader look at just how far out of the gate, out of the barn, the drones managed to escape. And wonder, was that a good idea?
Yeah, that I agree that I think a lot of people have an issue with this, which is when it comes to the drones themselves, they got to be, in my mind, nuts. Meaning how configurable and how many options you could have on a drone, what you could do when it comes to warhead straight, or okay, you want to add a phaser to it? Fine. You want to add some additional external armor? You can add that, so it still has the same punch, might be a little slower, but you can add that. And it gets totally nuts. I think I forget who calculated sometime. I think it might have been Ted Fay calculated out. It's like there's the possibility of over 1,600 different types of drones that you can create in SFB, which in my mind is nuts. You should have the basic drones and that's it. Drives me crazy.
I think that would actually that would basically put a clear blue water between a drone and a tactical missile, because tactical missiles are designed to be flexible, but you don't get reloads. The people that can take you don't back, in which case you got one set of reloads. Mm-hmm. But basically, they're much more finite things.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, most racks can only launch them once every second turn. Right. So that, I think, would still have enough room in the game system relative to a more streamlined drone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And
The thing is, like, bear in mind, even if that commander drones, your drone empires are probably too good, because like plasma by comparison seems to struggle in Treadcom, because there's no acceleration limits for ships, so they can run away from plasma really.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood.
And there's no stable plasma in SC either.
And I'm to this day, when it comes to FedCom, I'm still wondering, what was ADB thinking, or maybe Ken Burnside thinking, because I never heard this explained, which is, why can't plasma empires, why can't you have plasma torpedo tubes fully armed on turn one? Why? To me, that's a big disadvantage for plasma versus drones, which are all there. Every single weapon under FedCom can be ready to go, except for plasma on the first turn. I'm sorry. Why is plasma being penalized like that? That makes no sense to me. It never has. And I know I have to check back when it comes to the FedCom BBS and PHP BBS, whatever it's called. But I thought there was a part of SAP Online, the FedCom tournament that they had going there for a while, that they actually allowed people to start with, as a special rule for the tournament, they allowed the plasma torpedo tubes to be completely charged on turn one, because it was such a disadvantage, because basically you have to have any plasma ship has to hold back. It can't go forward into battle for the first turn, which is, in my mind, is just nuts. Yeah, Iggy, that's just in FedCom. Because in weapon status 3 for SFB, you can actually have every single weapon ready to roll, including the plasma torpedoes. Obviously, in some cases, you wouldn't want to do that, like plasma Rs. You don't want... It depends upon where you're in the situation, but probably you don't want to fully arm them because you can't hold them. But otherwise, I don't know why. Never have known. Anyway, Doug, sorry, you came in the middle of a conversation. Your own fault. Yeah. You were late, man. Your own fault. So how you doing?
I'm here just fathoming out why you were talking about what you were talking about, because I came in halfway through. Sorry, I kind of zoned out tonight. Didn't realize the time.
Again. Come on, you were supposed to be here last week.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll stop saying sorry here in a second, but yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine.
Great. I just kind of came along. That was kind of interesting. I did not know that you couldn't arm your plasmas in FedCom like that, because I'm not a big FedCom player. I've only played a few demos with you at the Gamers of Winter, Gamers of Summer event,
mm-hmm.
which, kind of here to plug.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's kind of interesting. I could maybe see why. Maybe it's just a balance issue. Maybe they figured it was just too powerful if it could come in fully armed on turn one.
But same time,
they needed to let the other players do something.
Oh, understood. But
that would be the only thing I could see with it.
Mm-hmm. But if you and Gary will back me up on this one, which is, and I mean, if you talk to any FedCom player, they'll automatically admit that the plasma players have a disadvantage versus the mm-hmm. drone players in FedCom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, but they do have one long-term advantage, is that they don't run out of plasmas eventually. So, once you're not on a fixed map, you might be okay in the long run. And it's like, when you guys were talking about the different variants on drones and stuff like that, that kind of brought to mind, wasn't there a tech tree kind of thing put out in one of the publications where you could basically, I think it was built for campaign use,
right?
Where you could like research your tech as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were talking about that and saying, hey, there's this mind-bogglingly large number of combinations of kinds of drones you can have, that's kind of like a tech tree issue, though, because a lot of those are just upgrades.
Well, in some cases, they're upgrades. Yeah. In other cases, it's that, okay, you could have like a two-space drone with half space of a warhead and half space of just null, you know, just armor, you know, just null space, so it's harder to kill. And then you also put on a single space phaser to go along for your troubles.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
that's kind of drone. That's kind of
a bunch of different combinations. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's kind of
interesting,
right? Oh yeah, and it's kind of nuts. I think the tech tree you're talking about was in the campaign designer's handbook.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that survived my last move or not. If it did, it's in storage.
So. Mm-hmm. Oh, understood.
But pretty much all my... I know my big set of books didn't make it. So there's that. But anyway, kind of came here to plug Gamers of Winter.
Okay.
And the GoFundMe for it.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a reminder for anybody that might be listening in or coming in to listen later, Gamers of Winter, Gamers of Summer is an event that I've run for about the last decade and a half down here in Harrisburg. And it's just kind of a multi-game, multi-field event. We have role players to come in and do their thing. We're about split between role players and board gamers. We've had very little in the way of miniatures over the years. Usually demos, but John Paul's been coming out for a long time. I think you were there for the very first one in like the Lakeside Church we did way back when.
Oh yeah.
In the that was a way back.
That was a
but
way
basically,
back.
Basically, we had a issue with a huge drop from. The last couple years of COVID, and when we came back to running the event, we had a huge drop in attendance. I'd say maybe around 30-40% drop from the normal attendance, and this happened twice in a row. I've been running the event as a not-for-profit. What we make is basically paying for the venue. And we took big hits. So I'm a bit reluctant to try to run it in the same kind of venue for the same cost if we're going to be like, just basically losing a bunch of money on it. I don't see it as sustainable.
Right.
We're throwing up a GoFundMe to basically draw in a bit more funds ahead of time so we can either lease a larger commercial space that we might have for a month of events or a short lease of where we can use it over a few months and just run event after event, or maybe a very large space for a single shot event. Now, we've been a single weekend event over the Martin Luther King weekend holiday in the winter, which is January, usually the third or fourth, sometimes second, depending on the year, Monday holiday. And that's kind of about it. I mean, we're open to, all sorts of different events.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions off the top?
Well,
about it?
This is a family-friendly event?
Oh, absolutely. We don't sacrifice anything to the elder gods. Although I'm sure there are they could. Yeah, a lot of our volunteers that come in are coming in to basically teach board games, and we're talking like, you know, demos for SFB, demos for FedCom, Starfleet Armada, but we're also talking about a lot of the Euro games, the train games, the like Twilight Imperium, things like that. We have people that will come in and run those games, and we have people that come in and will demo those games. So there's quite a bit. It's a very, let's say, commercial-free kind of environment. We're not driven by wanting to have a bunch of vendors come in. We're not a shop, so to speak. You don't have like a wall full of things and a shop guy running a demo of something and hoping you'll buy it afterwards. I mean, you know, the closest we've come to that is we have had a few people come in over the years. Like, you know, Ken Burnside came down once with his game, and we've had, I forget the name of the company, but DPGS Games, something like that. There's a company that's still out there doing their thing at conventions, and they've come by a couple of times, but not recently. But they did the geocaching game. Do you remember them? Mm-hmm. Remember that guy?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, was that the same guy that had the cat game?
Yes.
Yeah. I actually supported them, and I bought the whole set.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I still have that game.
The exception. Right. Yeah, the game makers are the exception to coming in. This is mainly kind of a community-based thing for South Central Pennsylvania. I mean, we have people that come in from Gettysburg as a group to do the role-playing thing for the Living Realms that used to be Greyhawk that was supported by the D&D people that before they stopped that. Goodness, they had like 50-something people for that before, I think it was Wizards of the Coast that just bought it out, and they cut the support for the that whole thing. But then the people in our area that ran their thing from Gettysburg, they go out to conventions, they rebuilt their own thing. And now they've got, you know, 30 to 50 people that'll come out on a given weekend. We're a varied community of players.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at a video of other events, like, you know, the larger big name events, and they're having gangbusters turnout, it looks like, now that we're in X year past the initial lockdown for the COVID. And it looks like that's resurging. We may see a big upturn in people. Like, we could be very, very surprised at the turnout.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if we can raise, say, a few thousand dollars, instead of just me collecting, you know, roughly half of our fee ahead of time through pre-registration and, you know, praying for the rest to come in through the door, which is kind of the way it's worked out for the last decade and a half, you know, maybe we can get a better space, a larger space. And if we have a large influx of people, then we're ready for it.
Right.
That's just kind of my thought on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was very pessimistic about it a little earlier in the year when the venue that we had been using for the last several years said that they were no longer renting to anybody. And the backup venue said that the community center wasn't renting out anymore to outside people outside of their own organization. So, you know, that puts us kind of behind the eight ball for finding a similar value space that we had.
Right.
I mean, the place we had a very, once they saw what we did, they were very happy with us.
Because
we're very low maintenance.
Exactly.
But, But when you're talking to like a hotel, even if they're familiar with the concept, they still have their set fees. They still have their, you know, corporate way of going about it, where it's going to cost X dollar regardless of whether you're coming in for a wedding or whether you're coming in to run, you know, a Warhammer tournament with 100 people or whatever.
Understood. So, yeah. Doug, just one pause. Just to reply to Dave in the chat room, is that, oh, a large fire hall might do. That's what we had. And then they decide that that they're no longer going to be doing that. So.
Well, and that wasn't just an us thing.
Right.
Because they did it for weddings. They had like an annual, or not annual, but a monthly buy and sell thing that came in and had tables. And they decided as an organization that they were just going to repurpose the space into basically a training and storage area instead of like as a revenue generating thing for their
firehouse,
which I think is kind of a bad business decision because that was a cash cow for them.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Now they're probably going to think about the lack of money coming in from it.
Oh, understood. Of course. Same time,
and we have no control over that.
Right, and of course,
that was an internal.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I was going to say,
we love them; they like us.
Mm-hmm.
But they just changed their model.
Right, understood.
And we're not included.
The only thing I was going to point out about that is that one thing we don't know, and Doug, I'm sure you don't know either. You might deny, and I'm totally wrong, which is. One thing that they saw as a cost as part of having that venue available to people was, of course, insurance that they had to keep up with for that space. In which case, that was an additional expense for the possibility of having, you know, actually they had an ongoing revenue because they had people there every month. But I'm not sure if that covered it, you know.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know either. You know, and so I can't say.
I'm talking with them, the money wasn't the issue. They had a faction within their own group that wanted to do that. Plus, they were also looking at ways to expand their fire hall. And, you know, discussion with reps and basically. Suggested that, you know, go the steel frame building thing in their back lot. Part of it, you know, they're looking at literally adding more garage space to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a money issue for them.
Right.
I don't think it was, and from the way that it was talked to me about, it wasn't a money issue. It was just they wanted to repurpose that big space into some other use.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who was running the rental really disagreed with it as an idea.
Right.
So.
Understood. Well, for what it's worth.
I mean, we got a sweetheart with
them. Yeah. Okay, Doug. Yes, Gary.
Well, for what it's worth, in Toronto, there was a board gaming society. They actually hosted a couple of Starfleet Universe-related things at the weekend that the event was on. But it was actually hosted. I'm not too sure what the U.S. equivalent is, but here in Canada they have the Royal Canadian Legion. It's like their offices that are set up for veterans of like, you know, wars and peacekeeping missions and stuff. But they also have like halls that they rent out for like various events to be hosted there. So I don't know what the U.S. equivalent is, but I mean maybe there's something like that. But that, you know, since you're in Harrisburg, maybe you can go to Three Mile Island and see if they get a discount there.
Yeah, the U.S. equivalent to that's the American Legion, literally. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was a organization member there for decades, and over the last decade and a half of doing this, when I went to the Legion I had been a member of for decades to do it and asked them about renting their hall space for it. And I explained to the person that runs what we do, they weren't interested. It was literally not supported. Now, that could change if I went back to them. They might be interested in it now. But on the other hand, I'm looking at basically the same kind of situation that we're coming out of, which is we had a sweetheart deal that we're probably not going to replicate.
Right.
What they were charging us was what they would normally charge for a day of a wedding. And, you know, and they would have, you know, wedding rentals that were the whole weekend. And so we basically got in for about half price on what their normal rental was. When I started looking around to places that we've been at before, such as the Pembroke Community Hall, a lot of these places had doubled or tripled their prices from when we had been there before. So there's that. I mean, and what I'm saying is with the, as far as finding a space isn't really, it is a challenge in its own way, but it's not the primary challenge. The primary challenge is being able to walk in and say, okay, we can pay for X. And if we were going back into the same sweetheart deal that we had with the venue that we're no longer using, then I have had my doubts about the ability of us to have it as a break-even event anymore. That's why we're doing the fundraiser. And if we can raise the money for it where it's basically paid for ahead of time, that's a huge head start for us. And it also puts us in a position where we might be able to expand into a larger space for more events, or into a space that we can have for multiple uses, and we run the main event on the normal weekend that we do it. And then if, say, a local group, Hawk, that does a lot of miniature stuff, decides they want to have an event of their own, and they're supporting this, they could come out on another weekend with a large contingent of people and do an event in that same space. That's if we get a non-traditional kind of rental for commercial space. Like if we go out to a strip mall and say, okay, we'll take this storefront, but we're only going to get it for a month. We rent it 3 months out. We have a place where if there are people that want to make it a five-day event, we could have a five-day event, and I'll be there to run the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And happy as a clam, so to speak. But that's just me. That's how I'm looking at this. I mean, there's that. Any thoughts on that? They don't have a lot more to say.
When it comes to, aside from Star Trek Universe stuff, like, have you traditionally guys had a lot from like other like game systems like BattleTech or Alpha Strike or anything like that as well, or does it ebb and flow in terms of which games show up in which years?
It does ebb and flow. We have some people though that have been consistent, like Paul. Paul's consistently there with SFB stuff and Starfleet Universe games. Now our turnout for that is, to me, kind of surprisingly low, considering how close a lot of people are. I mean, Harrisburg it's a nice hub on the Eastern Seaboard. We're pretty convenient to everything from basically Northern Virginia to New York City. We're kind of like right in the middle of that. And, you know, Lancaster, PA, which is about 45 minutes south of us, or southeast of us, is that's where they hold Historicon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Historicon actually used to be a venue next to Harrisburg, Camp Hill, basically part of the greater Harrisburg area. So, and when they moved around a little bit and then landed in Lancaster and stayed there. I mean, it's a really convenient place. I could see a huge contingent of SFE people being able to make it to that event for a few days. but we just haven't had that much of a turnout for it over the years. But yeah, a lot of other things we had, they vary. I mean, we've had people come out and run 40K demos. Mm-hmm. We've had people come out and run, you know, different miniatures demos. All sorts of different things over the years. But the only two things that have really kind of stuck is we have, well, actually three things. We've got Paul with the Starfleet Universe stuff. We've got a handful of board game people that bring in, you know, things like Puerto Rico, Wings, all sorts of different board games, Twilight Imperium.
Terraforming Mars.
Mind as a one day. Yeah, Terraforming Mars. Yeah, all that sort of genre, you know, and along with a lot of other things that are, you know, tabletop, like, oh, goodness. Oh, the RPG people, they're pretty consistent, too. But that's primarily the living, the Greyhawk Living Realms people. And they're literally a four-table contingent of people.
Yep.
That have their own thing. They'll take other people in it, come in, and they've never done it. They'll take new players. But they have their own consistent group of people that come out, too.
Yep. Yep. I still remember the one time we were at the, I forget what hotel it was. We were in the basement of the hotel.
And, suites.
Yeah.
And, one.
And we had the demo guy from Steve Jackson Games. The guy, he brought all kinds of stuff from Steve Jackson Games.
Brian Dersham, yeah.
Yep. And
yeah, he's actually been in a bunch of places for us.
Yeah, I remember playing Ogre. I played Ogre with him, which is kind of cool.
He brought in the Kickstarter set too, I believe. Yeah, I mean, we have a wide variety. If everybody that has been there in the last, I don't know, 5-6 years came out to the space that we just had, we would have to double our space. Because it's kind of like we have a core group of people that's about 50-ish that's kind of split between volunteers and attendees. And then we have, you know, another group of people that may come out every other event or every other year. There's that. I mean, it varies widely. And I think part of it may be the two different weekends. You know, one is in the middle of winter, which is our larger event of the two, and the other is Labor Day weekend.
Yep.
So.
Well, one other thing is in Toronto, at least, one of the handy things is the TTC, like the public transit system. So usually, like, depending which part of the city you're in, or if you're coming from elsewhere in Ontario, it's usually fairly convenient-ish to get to a venue. Like, you'd have to, I mean, unless you went out of your way to find a venue that's not TTC adjacent, then, but I wonder, like, when it comes to Harrisburg, if there are people who are coming from out of town or who live in it, that maybe, you know, especially with the petrol prices, want to leave the car at home. What is the public transit like to be able to get to and from the likely venues that would be on the table?
Oh, that kind of sucks. I got to tell you that straight up. You would really want to rent a car for the most part. Hold on one second. I'm going to... Guys, Daddy's on the phone. Please no screaming. At least not until I shut this door. That part is... greatest here. Definitely not the strong part of Harrisburg. They do have a good transit system as far as, you know, buses go, but that's primarily a, you know, weekday thing. They do run on weekends, but quite frankly, if you're coming from out of town, the best thing you could probably do is, depending on where we're at, where we end up, is either get a hotel that's very close to the venue, and commute with someone who lives in the area or rent a car. But that being said, actually getting to Harrisburg, if you don't want to drive, is actually extremely accessible. The airport has a ton of connections.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's the state capital, and you could get here from Chicago, New York City, Baltimore has a direct flight. It's not like there's three flights in and out. If you look up Harrisburg International Airport, you can see all the connections. I didn't count them, but they were quite sizable for the size city that we are.
Oh, agreed. Actually, that's where we usually pick up and drop off my sister-in-law, who comes in from Costa Rica.
If you're coming in from Philly or D.C. area, there's Amtrak.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Amtrak has a connection here as well. I could see somebody having a concern because unless we end up in a hotel or large hotel, it's pretty much which we actually did do for quite a few years.
Oh, I know.
Because that was actually kind of an interesting shift. We've been back and forth between community centers, hotels, and the firehouse. And the firehouse was our home for quite a while.
Yep.
But like I'm saying, we end up with the right kind of money, but we can't get a commercial space. I'm looking at a one shot in a hotel as the most likely other option.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not always that cheap.
Understood.
Remember the one year where one of our long term venues accidentally double booked, and we were on the short end of the stick on that. We ended up in a hotel with a smaller space, but it was adequate, even though we were all kind of squished in there.
Mm-hmm. Was that the Hilton?
But it wasn't like, was it the Hilton, honey? Oh, no, it wasn't the Hilton.
Okay.
It was, and it wasn't Comfort Suites. It was one of the various, like, hotels that are over in the Union Deposit exit area.
Mm-hmm.
But that was basically a big conference room.
Right.
Small, big meeting room, small conference room kind of thing. It was around 80 people. It was the amount that you could legally have in there.
Yeah, I think that's the one where we were down in the basement, right?
Well, no, there were two where we were down in the basement.
Yeah, because I remember
that little one was one, but the Comfort Suites in Grantville,
mm-hmm.
we ended up with their basement space several times.
Right.
And I'll point out that we actually used both of their spaces several times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know we used
also. They had upstairs.
Right. I remember using that. And also, I remember using the basement one, too.
I loved that one until the venue pissed off, like, a huge chunk of our people enough that, you know, there's like nearly an open revolt among the membership that they wanted to go somewhere else. So,
yeah,
there's that.
Yeah.
I personally like the venue.
No, me too.
Not just because it was within a 5-minute drive, but it was actually a good spot to be in, halfway decent.
Oh yeah,
as far as hotel goes.
Yeah, and a good bit of restaurants close by, and if I recall correctly, right down the street was a pretty decent Italian place where you could pick up some like cheesesteaks and things like that, which I enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed. And fried wings. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the venues that I've kind of eyed up is, do you remember when we were at Wyndham Gardens?
Mm-hmm.
For a few years?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason we stopped going there was they repurposed their main ballroom into basically being a cafe style thing,
mm-hmm.
just an open cafe.
Right.
But across from them is another place that has large meeting rooms.
Hmm.
There's actually two different places across the street from them that would be excellent for us. But when I priced them years ago, they were out of our
league. Yep, understood.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as, like, you know, the social hall thing goes, I'm okay with doing a social hall.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is getting started into a spot like that when their bread and butter is literally weddings and other events like that. So.
Understood.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Actually, well, I think we should wrap up here. Doug, it's been wonderful having dropped by and have people point out, you know, gave us a winner again, you know, gameistawinner.net. Just go there, and the GoFundMe is right there on the front page. Just click on the donate button to help out. You know, whether you come or not, obviously if you come, it's even better. But if you want to just help support, you know, the event, you know, even if you can't come, that'd be great too. So,
if I might throw out an alibi, real quick.
Mm-hmm. Real quick.
Yes. No. Maybe.
Yes. Yes.
I still haven't heard from them yet. But a few episodes back, a few podcasts back, we talked about the group up in New York that had their event. They were going to do their last event.
Yeah, from Council of Five Nations. That group.
And I just want to let you guys know that are listening now that I've discussed it with one of their members a little bit and gave him the here's why we're accessible. Here's where you can fly into if you need to. If they come on board to do this, we might end up with a larger venue, because that would give me the confidence to go do that. But because of the number of people that they would bring
right.
to that one shot. So.
Agreed.
There's that. Yeah. But anyway, that's all I have. Thank you, Paul.
Okay, you're welcome. Yeah, you have a good evening, Doug.
Yeah, I'll be listening to you in the final moments here,
Yar. Okay. Bye. Gary, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us this evening. It's always a pleasure.
I just hope that for you guys from Pennsylvania, it isn't a sore point if I jokingly suggest that if you're looking for cheap real estate, maybe you could fish around Harrisburg and see what the rates are over Three Mile Island.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I got a couple towers that, you know, that they're not doing anything with, you know. Some are a little high in radiation. You know, you'll be fine. You won't die for at least a couple months.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you get any BattleTech players, I mean, their settings filled with nuclear fallout, so, you know, they should be used to it.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, good night, Gary. So, had a nice evening with Gary talking about the wonderful feds without drones. What a concept. And of course, Doug and Gamers the Winner. And please, you know, if you're in the Harrisburg area, if you're not in the Harrisburg area, if you're down in Maryland, you're within driver's distance. It's a great, I call it a one-room convention. Because that's basically what it is. We have a single room, which we're all together as a community playing games, which is fantastic. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.